this presentation is really a story of having a need to evaluate a public health program and then sleuthing around for epidemiologic data from disparate sources to realize that goal. So first I'll give some brief background on the issue of teen pregnancy in the South Bronx, and then I'll discuss one of our office's many efforts to decrease the teen pregnancy rate. And then finally, the majority of my talk will focus on the problem of evaluating that program and the epidemiological solution. I also brought some of our New York City branded condoms, so feel free to pick some up on your way out. Over the past decade, New York City's teen pregnancy rate has been on the decline, but you can still see a large gap between the borough of the Bronx and the other four boroughs that has not diminished over that 10-year period. And despite the decline, New York City's overall rate is still higher than the U.S. average. And in certain parts of the city, such as the South Bronx, the rates are truly alarming. So every year, 15% of all 15 to 19-year-old girls in the South Bronx get pregnant. This is evidence of just one of the many health disparities that differentiates the South Bronx from the rest of New York City. In order to mitigate the disparities that exist between certain economically disadvantaged neighborhoods and the city as a whole, three district public health offices, or DPHOs, were created over 4 years ago, specifically to address the health concerns of people living in the South Bronx, East and Central Harlem, and Bushwick and Bedford-Stuyvesant in North Central Brooklyn. We at the DPHOs take our cues from the local epidemiology. We work with community leaders to put health interventions in place, and then, of course, collect data to evaluate the work our public health programs are doing. So when the South Bronx DPHO opened, our premier charge was to tackle the teen pregnancy rate. And toward that end, we've conducted research into issues of teen access to reproductive health care, clinic policies that might erect barriers for teens, and provider beliefs and practices that might negatively impact adolescents' ability to receive contraception. In addition to understanding the teen sexual and reproductive health care landscape, we also undertook various programmatic efforts to reduce teen pregnancy in our communities. And I'll speak about one of those efforts in a moment. In collaboration with the Department of Health's Bureau of Maternal, Infant, and Reproductive Health, the DPHO created a strategic plan to reduce the teen pregnancy rate in the South Bronx by 37% by the end of 2008. The plan delineates 5 ways in which we at the Department of Health can work to link students to care, create unified, clear messages that resonate with teenagers, and improve the quality of care in our local clinics and doctor's offices. Now, one key objective of the plan is to achieve compliance with the 1991 Chancellor of Education's mandate, which established health resource rooms in New York City public high schools where students can get free condoms as well as health information. These rooms need to be open at least 10 periods per week and have to have both a male and female staff person trained in condom distribution. Back in 2003, when the office opened, half of South Bronx high schools were non-compliant with this mandate. So we began to place community health workers or public health advisors, we call them PHAs, into non-compliant schools to staff health resource rooms and get schools in a position eventually to take over the manning of the and operation of these rooms themselves. This is a sign our youth advisory board helped design to alert students to the presence of a health resource room on campus. The youth advisory board is a group of local teens who volunteer at the DPHO with whom we confer when we need to understand issues from a teenage perspective. So our community health workers staff the health resource rooms at least once a week as a way to supplement the Department of Education efforts to comply with the mandate. And we currently have a presence in about 30% of our area high schools. These staff collect data on the number of teenage contacts, the number of condoms they distribute, the types of information students request, etc. Department of Education and the Department of Health call this effort the Condom Availability Program. And over the past 3 years, we've handed out just over 107,000 condoms. And each year, we distribute more and more than we did during the previous year. So that's great. You know, we sure do give away a lot of condoms. Unfortunately, we didn't really have a concrete goal before we initiated the condom availability program. And when we looked to other cities and their condom distribution programs, we didn't find any that had set goals from which we could learn. But our current health commissioner lives and dies by data, so we needed to answer the question, how many condoms are enough? It's not enough just to hand out a whole bunch. We needed to know how many do our local youth really need. This is obviously important from both a programmatic and an evaluative standpoint. So the first thing we did was search the literature to see if such an answer was already out there. And it wasn't, but we did find a paper that helped focus our thinking. The aim of the Meekers and Ben Rossum article was to explain inconsistencies in 4 African nations between information on reported level of condom use on the one hand and data on the number of condoms sold and distributed on the other. So, for example, data show that condom sales are increasing, but self-reported use remains the same, and the authors wanted to know why. So it's a very different problem in a rather different population, but the general estimation procedure they used was obviously applicable to our South Bronx question. The number of condoms used per person is a product of the likelihood of condom use and the frequency of intercourse, and the total number used, and for us it would be the total number needed, takes the number needed per person derived in the first equation and multiplies that by the size of the population and the number in said population who are sexually active. So it's pretty straightforward, right? But the problem was, where are we going to find all of those data for the South Bronx? And the answer turned out to be from various sources. The South Bronx DPHO's catchment area is defined by 10 zip codes, so the 2000 census contained all the population size information that we needed. New York City conducts the CDC-based Youth Risk Behavior Survey every other year, which monitors risk-taking behaviors among public high school students. Luckily, we oversampled the three DPHO neighborhoods, so we had South Bronx-specific data on proportion of teens who are currently sexually active and those who report condom use at last sex. Unfortunately, the YRBS did not inquire about frequency of sex, so we turned to the National Survey of Family Growth and obtained a national estimate for teenagers' frequency of intercourse. So those are the building blocks of our estimate, and now for specifics about the calculation. So there are 22,255 males in the South Bronx. So first question, why focus on males? If we included both males and females in the estimate, we would most likely be double counting condoms for intercourse much of the time, assuming that teens are having sex with other teens. This would yield an overestimate of the number of condoms needed. But many of you are probably thinking, what about younger female, older male dyads? And the literature does show that between 7% and 19% of 15 to 19-year-old females have older male sex partners, whereas most teenage males have sex with same-aged or younger females. So although we will be missing these younger female, older male dyads in our estimate, the literature also shows that males tend to overreport their sexual activity. So these biases work in opposite directions and will at least partially offset each other. 40.5% of teen males in the South Bronx report that they're sexually active. And then the NSFG reports data on intercourse frequency among unmarried teenage males for two different groups, those aged 15 to 17 and those aged 18 to 19. The proportion of sexually active 14 to 18-year-old South Bronx males was far closer to that of the 18 to 19-year-old males nationally. And in fact, there was only a difference of 0.7% in terms of those that had never had sex. So in calculating our estimate, we used the NSFG 18 to 19-year-old distribution and then took the difference, that 0.7%, and we redistributed it across the other four categories according to the national distribution. And voila! Now, if we wanted to cover all sex acts between teens in the South Bronx, we'd need to distribute about 584,000 condoms per year. But we can adjust that for the student enrollment at the 17 schools in which we have a person distributing condoms, and that number drops to just over 104,000 condoms per year. So how do we use this formula and these data? Well, we calculate targets specific to the schools that we're in based on student enrollment. This allows us to set standards for the condom availability program and monitor its progress. Every month, we produce a summary report for the entire program, as well as reports for each school. These reports give both the 100% goal, the number of condoms needed to cover all sexual intercourse at that school, as well as a 68% target based upon the proportion of students who report condom use at last sex, and again from the YRBS, that was 68%. This is an example of our aggregate monthly report. The big black box is there to cover up the names of the schools. We list enrollment, both the 68% and the 100% target for each school, which is based on the school's enrollment, and then the percent of those targets we achieved. By May of 2007, this report shows we had distributed 50,070 condoms across our 17 schools, accounting for 48% of the total goal and 65% of that 68% target. And this is just to show what the individual school report looks like. In addition to giving data on year-to-year changes in condom distribution, the reports also provide school-specific information on what percent of our targets we've achieved. At this school, we surpassed our 68% target and reached 72% of the full target. These individual school reports allow us to identify schools that might have erected barriers to the program, such as lack of space and lack of principal support. We never use these reports, I want to stress, to evaluate the efforts of our staff within the schools. If a school's health resource room is underperforming, it's almost surely a school-related and not a staff, Department of Health staff-related problem. So what I've gone through today is truly an estimation, and of course there are limitations. So first, the estimate does not adjust for lost or broken condoms, which occurs about 3 to 5% of all sex acts. And secondly, homosexual males are included. And according to the YRBS, almost 5% of South Bronx teens reported they were homosexual. So those two biases, again, work in opposite directions. Frequency of sex might be especially problematic in our current estimate, just because our local younger teens and national older teens are equally likely to be having sex. It doesn't necessarily follow that those two groups are having the same amount of sex. So luckily, in 2007, a frequency of sex question was added to the YRBS, so I'll really have a totally South Bronx-specific estimate. So we have a target, but the story doesn't really end there. The next chapter involves our figuring out for what proportion of that target the DPHO is truly responsible. Teenagers get condoms from other sources as well. So the Department of Education, it's really their condom availability program. They distribute condoms in schools. Community-based organizations distribute condoms. Teenagers buy condoms, as do their parents. So when should we consider our job done? We're not quite certain yet, but we're hoping to get there. So that's all. Thanks so much, and I'm happy to take any questions. Sure. So the 584,000 is based on census data for the entire South Bronx, and the 104,000 is just on the 17 public high schools that we have a presence. Exactly. So the YRBS, as it stood in 2005, asked everybody about condoms and other forms of birth control, so we do have that for males and females. And actually, so the way that it works is the Department of Epi sends out an email and says, if you want questions included, give us the question or justification and a source. So the DPHO took up the frequency of sex, and actually maternal infant reproductive health included a question about older males or difference in ages between partners. So we'll actually have a really good sense of that dynamic in the South Bronx as well. So it's a great question. This is just one of our many initiatives around teen pregnancy prevention. We also have a school and healthcare program, which I'm happy to talk with you about after. We've been working for about 8 or 9 months, so give us a couple of more months. Teen pregnancy rate's a pretty intractable thing, but there are some individual success stories about, you know, specific to various programs that I'm happy to talk about after. So we have two groups of schools. We call them Stage 1 and Stage 2. So Stage 1 are the schools where they really do require our presence. And once we've worked with them to get them trained, a male and female staff person, and they have a space dedicated for a health resource room, then they can become Stage 2. So in the last academic year, we were in 17 schools. In this academic year, we're in 15. Because of those the two schools, one became a Stage 2, and one just kicked us out because they no longer want us there, and they don't want to be compliant with the mandate. Interestingly, well, yes. Yeah, so in health resource rooms, condom demonstrations are allowed in New York City. They're not allowed in classrooms. So if a student wants to learn how to use a condom, they would go to a health resource room. But one of the other great programs that we have, which also addresses this question, is school and healthcare, where that individual that's in the health resource room, that public health advisor, will also spend one afternoon a week in a local clinic. So they can make a referral to a teen in the health resource room and say, you know, on Wednesday, I'll be at this clinic. Why don't you come and I'll help you navigate the system? And we have had some great success with that program. No, I think my impression is that our youth population are thirsting for this knowledge, and I don't want to say things out loud, but New York City perhaps could do a better job.